A rapid succession of animal eyes. BBC Natural World. A frog pokes its head up from dark, glistening water. Then a series of brightly coloured frogs.
There are more than 5,000 species of frogs and toads, and they come in all colours, shapes and sizes. Over the years, I've filmed many different kinds of them from across the world.
This is the largest frog in the world, the Goliath frog.
And here, in the leaf litter in this Madagascan forest, is the tiniest of them all.
The size of a fly, a frog hops onto his face.
They can hop and climb.
One in the air.
They can parachute from the treetops and burrow deep into the ground. Some, seemingly, can even walk on water. Frogs, like newts and salamanders, are amphibians, cold-blooded animals that need water to survive. But despite this, they have colonized some of the hottest and the coldest places on Earth.
Frogs are truly fascinating. You may not have thought much about them, and they don't necessarily grab the headlines, but there's more to frogs than you might suppose.
A frog slides back into the water. Attenborough's fabulous frogs. David holds a small green frog in his hand.
Frogs were the first creatures that I kept when I was a boy. And I thought they were fascinating and beautiful. And I still think they are. They were, of course, the first creatures to move up onto land.
The frog with red eyes and orange feet leaps from David's hand and lands on a wooden plaque where it settles, then morphs into a skeleton. David's at a table laid with a number of museum exhibits.
Today's frogs are descended from a group of amphibians that lived around 300 million years ago. And they were very like the modern salamander. That is to say, they had a very, very long spine with about 30 vertebrae in it, ending in a tail. But then about 250 million years ago, an intermediate form appeared, like this fossil from Madagascar. And already you can see a difference. Most importantly, the spine, instead of being 30 vertebrae long, is only about 15. The tail has almost been lost altogether. The hind legs are very much bigger. Compare that with today's amphibian. Most significantly, its spine is now again halved. But the pelvis has become greatly elongated. But that's nothing compared with what has happened to the legs. They are gigantic. So you can see that this animal is a leaper.
And today, some exploit these spectacular legs very dramatically.
A series of jumping frogs, then a red-striped one.
This little frog is an amazing jumper. It can leap 30 times its own body length. And there are some that can go even farther. One can leap 55 times its body length, the equivalent to me jumping the length of a football pitch.
The inch-long frog jumps in slow motion, then archive film from New York.
In the 1930s, in the United States, frog leaping became something of a craze. People bet on how far a frog could jump.
Film shows a large toad hopping from a circle on the ground, with people cheering on. Then the jumps are measured. Women in swimsuits hold frogs.
Even beauty queens took part in frog jumping contests, each with her own pet.
In a line, the women tap their pets with sticks to encourage them to jump along the grass. Then the winner raises the cup, sitting her frog on the top of it. A green speckled frog leaps from a branch in slow motion.
In the past, people couldn't understand how a frog could leap so far. But a little scientific research revealed how it does it.
The glistening amphibian lands on a slick, wet leaf. Then another, sitting in a patch of moss, jumps into the air, stretching its legs out behind it.
When a frog is in its sitting position, its leg muscles are contracted. This stretches the leg tendons.
Computer-generated images.
Tendons are elastic, like rubber bands.
A crouching frog.
Stretching them stores energy within them. And then, when the frog jumps, the tendons release that energy, like firing a catapult. And the frog is propelled into the air.
A brown frog leaps through long grass and lands in some water. A number of small frogs jumping across the surface of the water.
When this skittering frog from India jumps, it simultaneously extends its webbed toes so that it virtually bounces across the surface of the water.
The skittering frog in slow motion, galloping over the surface of a stretch of water. It dives down, its long legs trailing behind it.
The webs between the toes, so useful for swimming, can also help when moving around on land. The gliding leaf frog has such extensive webbing that when it jumps, the outstretched toes of its feet act like parachutes and keep it in the air long enough to travel considerable distances.
The gliding leaf frog travels through the air with the deep blue sky behind it. The translucent yellow webbed feet glow in the sunlight. It lands, clinging to the edge of a large leaf. The feet are long and spindly with rounded pads at the end of each toe. The green frog climbs away.
When the first amphibians emerged from the water, the only animal sounds to be heard on land were the whirs and hums of insects. But the amphibians also needed to communicate with one another, and soon they added their own croaks and whistles.
Frogs blow air from their lungs through vocal cords and so produce a croak. But the muscles that do that are comparatively weak, so many species amplify the sound with resonators, cheek pouches or throat pouches.
David strokes the one in his hand. The throat pouches expand greatly as they croak.
One purpose for calling is to find a mate. A female gliding leaf frog in the jungles of South America is listening to all the males calling around her. Then she sets off in the direction of the loudest voice, because the owner is likely to be the strongest male, the best mate.
She nimbly climbs a branch, then a vine.
It's a long haul.
In the darkness, she clambers up the vine, over a branch and along a twig.
On the way, she has to avoid the weaker males. It's not all that easy. She has to fight off several at a time.
three gliding tree frogs scramble over each other, moving along the branch together. One clambers over the back and head of a pair of mating frogs before leaping off.
Eventually, the strongest male gets his reward. It's a case of he who shouts loudest.
The female crawls along as the smaller male clings to her back. Now David's with a mottled green frog which resembles a leaf.
This is called the splendid leaf frog, and quite right too. Most frogs communicate with their voice by croaking or indeed squeaking. And this one does too, but it has rather a quiet voice. And it also communicates by using its legs. What it'll do is to use them to wave to other frogs. And its legs are specially adapted for the purpose. They have flaps on them, so they appear to be specially wide and prominent.
This waving technique is something I once filmed with another beautiful frog. We found it several years ago in the rainforests of Panama.
Rushing water, then a bright orange frog with black markings crawls over a mossy bank.
This is a golden Panama male, and he is looking for a mate. But a rival stands in his way. Just in case his call can't be heard above the sound of water, he reinforces his message with a visual signal, a wave. His rival waves back. He repeats his signal, so there's no misunderstanding.
He picks up a front leg and moves it in a circle. They move off. Then two sit on a bare rock.
But now another male arrives. He too is looking for a female, and he isn't going to let anyone stand in his way. This kind of argument has to be settled with a wrestling match. That should teach him.
One pushes down on the head of the other.
The loser submits, lowering his head.
The victor climbs off his back and stalks away, while the loser lifts his head to watch him go.
And the winner continues his hunt for a mate.
A gold frog with no markings.
Finally, a large golden female arrives. Just the ticket.
Glowing in the sunlight, the male calls, then waves his arms in a circle. He slowly crawls towards the female, who's sitting behind a leaf.
He waves to show he's interested. She waves back.
She lifts her hand and wiggles her fingers. The male frog crawls faster now, down a rock alongside a gushing stream. The female's throat pulses as she waits for him to leap on her back.
It's a success. His waving courtship has worked.
They jump into fast-flowing water.
Calling and waving are comparatively subtle ways of attracting a female. Other frogs use a more macho approach.
Dramatic forked lightning.
Rains on the African savannah.
A large frog explodes out of a patch of earth, blinking and covered with mud. It wipes some from its eyes before blinking.
The African male bullfrog, one of the biggest of all frogs. He fights for the right to mate.
A male approaches a mating pair. Then he lifts the other male off and into the water. A number of them.
The males assemble in a newly filled pond and battle with each other to establish who is the strongest.
They launch themselves at other males, shoving them out of the way. In slow motion, one bashes another away with his chin, and they both fall into the water.
The winner will mate with most of the females here.
He climbs on top.
No such luck for the loser.
Wispy clouds move across the full moon at night.
Courtship techniques vary widely, but for one remarkable little brown frog in Madagascar, the key to mating rituals is skin colour.
Leaping over leaf litter.
Following a bout of heavy rain, the frogs all gather at a waterhole. The females are still brown, but the males have turned a bright yellow.
Several swim in the water, then one puffs out its pouch.
This enables males and females to tell each other apart in the multiple mating that is about to happen.
A number of brown frogs sit on a rock with yellow frogs on their backs. They leap into the pool.
They have to judge the moment very precisely. There must be enough water in which to lay their eggs, but not so much that the eggs are washed away.
A brown female frog jumps away from four males. Another mating pair in the water, then a male leaps high into the air. Male frogs call, then dozens are dotted about on twigs and branches reaching down into the water. A female holds onto a twig as a male sits next to her. Several sit in the pool as a small yellow male clings to the back of a larger brown female. One watches from a pile of leaves, and another springs past the mating couple, knocking them over into the water.
After a few hours, the orgy is over, and the males turn back to brown again. It will happen all over again next year, when the rains return and more eggs are laid.
Round white eggs.
When speeded up, you can watch the extraordinary way in which eggs develop.
The white embryos seem to spin inside their eggs. Slowly, black eyes appear in the dancing embryos. In speeded-up film, one by one, the baby tadpoles fall from their eggs on the green leaf. A close-up of white tadpoles in their transparent eggs.
These eggs were laid by a leaf frog, and inside the jelly of each one you can see a little tiny dot. And if you look closely, you may even see it move. And over the next 5 or 7 days they will continue to develop until they're strong enough to emerge from the egg and drop into water beneath.
In slow motion, one drops from its egg and lands with a plop in a pool. Another falls and immediately swims off. A pool swarming with tadpoles.
And then, over the next 4 or 5 weeks, an enormous transformation takes place.
A close-up.
The gills, which enable the tadpole to breathe in water, gradually disappear. The tadpole's intestines, accustomed to a vegetarian diet, have to be completely remodeled to allow them to digest animal tissues. Its skull, which was made of cartilage, turns to bone, and the backbone grows. The tadpole's legs get larger as the tail shrinks, absorbed by the body. It's an astonishing and radical transformation, which takes around 6 weeks.
A fully developed froglet. Now, sunlight glints through a forest canopy.
A pond in Madagascar. Not a good place for eggs, because it's full of fish that would eat frogs' eggs, given the chance. So this little frog lays her eggs on the leaves of trees that overhang the pond. The tadpoles are maturing quickly, but there is danger here too.
A wasp arrives.
A predatory wasp has found the clumps of spawn.
It reaches for one hanging in the large sack of jelly.
It manages to slice its way through the protective jelly.
It drags one out as other tadpoles wriggle in the spawn.
And now it starts to chew up the tadpoles.
It takes another and eats it tail first, standing by the dozens of tiny black tadpoles clinging to the leaf.
But these tadpoles, although only 5 days old, can react to such attacks. The vibrations created by the wasp stimulate them to hatch prematurely. The jelly liquefies and the tadpoles travel down the leaf and drop into the water below.
A large, clear drop of jelly hangs from the leaf with the tadpoles sliding down the edge.
They may be underdeveloped, but they can swim, and they stand a better chance of survival in the pond than they did with the wasp on their leaf.
They drop into the water.
These youngsters had to survive without parental care, but other frog parents go to great lengths to look after their offspring.
David peers at a red speckled frog behind glass.
This little frog is tiny, hardly bigger than my thumbnail. It's a strawberry poison dart frog. It may be very small, but when it comes to caring for its young, it's a real champion.
Flying over a hilly rainforest with mist hanging in the valleys.
It lives in the wet lowland forests of Central America.
Sun shines through the forest canopy. A deep red frog with a beady black eye sits on a strip of bark next to a clutch of eggs.
This female is guarding a clump of newly fertilized eggs. She and her mate will keep watch, making sure that their offspring are safe from predators. But the leaf litter is drying out, and the tadpoles need water. She must move them, and fast, so she encourages one of them to jump onto her back. But it's not a pond on the forest floor that she's looking for now. She wants a bromeliad, a vase plant, and they grow up in the branches.
With a single tadpole on her back, the purple-legged frog crawls up a trunk.
Climbing a tree as tall as this is an immense journey for such a tiny creature.
Up in the tree, the frog clambers over the long, flat leaf of a plant attached to a branch.
A bromeliad plant has a tiny permanent pool of water at its centre. An excellent nursery for a tadpole. And there she delivers it.
She stands in the reservoir and the tadpole swims away. As it zips about, she turns and hops off.
But she has several tadpoles. So now she must rush back to the others down on the ground. She collects them one by one and carries each to its own bromeliad.
The tadpole wriggles on her back as she crawls along, then one in a pool of water.
She continues to make her long, arduous journeys while the male guards the remaining eggs on the forest floor.
It hops along a branch, then a long leaf.
But the little bromeliad pools don't have any food in them, so she lays an unfertilized egg in each one for each tadpole to eat.
The egg falls through the water.
A single egg won't sustain a developing tadpole for very long, so she has to return to each pool every few days and deliver another food parcel. This continues for the next 2 weeks, during which time she will have travelled over half a mile. An astonishing distance for such a tiny creature. Eventually, the tadpole develops into a froglet, large enough to leave the pool and fend for itself. Mum has done her job well. But it isn't always a female who takes on the task of rearing the young. Sometimes the male does. And one of those lives in the mountains of northern Spain. This little creature is called a toad because its skin is rather dry. But the names frog and toad are largely interchangeable, for all amphibians with this shape are very closely related. This one is known as the midwife toad. When they mate, the male clasps the female with his arms and squeezes until she releases her eggs.
He blinks one eye, then the other.
They emerge in a long chain of jelly, and as they do so, he fertilizes them.
The toad lifts the ribbon of eggs onto its back.
He then hitches them up around his hind legs, and the pair will then separate.
He moves them around a bit with his hind legs.
She leaves, and he carries them around until the time comes to deposit them in water.
A large toad sits in some moss.
The midwife toad is not the only species in which the male takes care of the young.
David peers at the dark greyish-green frog, which stares silently with its silver eyes.
The African bullfrog is quite a character. It's the biggest frog in Africa, and it's very aggressive. It's got a very powerful bite, for one thing. But in spite of that, it's a devoted father.
A bullfrog sits in a pool full of tadpoles.
Bullfrogs spawn in little pools around the margins of a larger pond. And after mating is over, one male stays to watch over them all. But the water is evaporating, and the tadpoles are now crowded together in a single pool. And that, too, is now drying up.
Speeded up film.
The tadpoles will be dead within an hour, unless the male can do something to save them.
Two are beached.
And he starts doing just that. He begins to dig a channel to connect the tadpole's little pool to the main pond. He must be quick.
Sitting between the small pool and the pond, he uses his hind legs to kick away at the mud. He moves the earth aside as the sun glares down and the tadpoles flail about in the muddy puddle.
It's a major task. But he's determined.
He's created a channel, then crawls away to let them through.
Down they swim.
They wriggle their plump grey bodies as they make their way through the mud and to the larger pool of water. The bullfrog sits watching as the seething mass of tadpoles pours along the channel. Then he clambers into the water with them.
The tadpoles are saved.
The water turns black with the number of tadpoles swimming together. The bullfrog sits watching over them. A tumbling waterfall splashing over rocks in a river lined by trees.
But perhaps the prize for fatherly care should go to a rare little frog that lives in the forests of Chile.
It has a pointed nose.
This is Darwin's frog. After the female has laid her eggs on the moist ground and the male has fertilized them, he apparently eats them. but they go not into his stomach, but into his throat pouch. And there they develop and wriggle.
Standing still, his pouch moves about.
And when they're ready, one jumps out.
It thrashes about as the froglet arrives.
And another.
The tiny green frog sits by its parent, then hops off.
Giving birth from your mouth is pretty odd. But what about producing babies from your back? The Suriname toad is an aquatic species from South America. The female produces around 100 eggs at a time. The male collects them and steers them onto the female's back.
He sweeps his fan-like feet to stick them on.
And there they stick.
As they mate, the pair turn a somersault underwater, waving their webbed feet and holding them out as they settle on the gravel.
The skin on the female's back then begins to swell around them. A membrane grows over them and eventually completely encloses them. After a couple of days, they've virtually disappeared. A few weeks later, the young hatch as tadpoles.
The shiny, silvery tadpoles swim off through the green-tinged water.
In some Suriname toads, the young remain within their mother's back so long that they emerge not as tadpoles, but little froglets.
A number of spindly fingers stick up through the holes on the frog's back. Then tiny froglets wriggle free from the skin and swim away. The mother lays still as her tiny babies emerge from her bag. They drift upwards towards the surface. They float motionless in the water with their arms and legs outstretched.
It's certainly an odd way of producing young, but it works.
In slow motion, dozens of tiny frogs jump across water. One leaps high into the air. They leap across the glistening mud.
All adult amphibians are hunters. To help them catch their prey, they have a secret weapon. A special kind of tongue.
In slow motion, a frog leaps out of the water and stretches out its pink tongue. It misses the dragonfly, but grabs it with its hand.
The extendable tongue is an amphibian invention. No fish ever had one. And the tongue is not attached to the back of the mouth like ours, but to the front.
A frog dives underwater. Two green frogs watch a butterfly on a flower. One leaps and grabs it.
Frogs eat worms and insects, and the larger the frog, the bigger the prey it will tackle. And some species, like these cane toads, will eat almost anything, including one another.
A number of tiny froglets hop across muddy ground. A larger toad watches one, then snaps it up with its tongue. Preserved frogs in jars.
It's recently been discovered that way back in prehistory, there were some frogs big enough to catch mammals.
Several specimens.
A few years ago, fragments were found in Madagascar of a really giant frog, dating back from about 65 million years ago. This is part of its skull. Here is the orbit of the eye, and this is where its spine joined. The spine would have run down here. And this is the right cheek. So the animal's head, when complete, would have been about that wide. So this really was a monster. And here is a computer reconstruction of the complete skeleton. The scientists who worked on it referred to it among themselves as a devil frog. And when the time came to give it a scientific name, they called it Beelzebufo. 65 million years ago was just towards the end of the reign of the dinosaurs. So maybe this giant frog actually ate hatchling dinosaurs, as been shown in this artist's imaginative reconstruction. Some frogs today also have teeth, but they don't chew with them. The teeth are used either for defence or as a way of gripping prey.
David feeds a frog.
This large monkey frog is in the process of swallowing a cricket. And, strangely perhaps, it uses its eyes to help it do so.
It closes its eyes as it swallows.
I'm waiting for it to burp.
A close-up of a cricket, then a mottled grey toad thrusts out its tongue to grab it and eat it.
As a frog swallows, it pulls its bulging eyes downwards so that they help to push the food down its throat.
An x-ray of a frog swallowing and its eyes moving to help the food along. A red-eyed tree frog.
Most frogs have very big eyes. They have to be big because frogs, since they don't have necks, can't turn their heads to look to one side. Instead, their two eyes between them give a frog an almost 360-degree vision.
A frog watches insects.
They also have a kind of see-through third eyelid, which protects their eyes underwater without blocking their sight. The red-eyed tree frog's third eyelid has a distinctive green pattern, which, when out of water, helps with camouflage. Frogs have managed to adapt to a surprising range of environments.
David holds the green frog in his hand.
The little red-eyed tree frog lives up in the forest canopy catching insects. And to do that, of course, it has to be an expert climber. So, not surprisingly, they have very special hands and feet.
It uses its yellow feet to climb up a large, smooth leaf. The red-eyed tree frog climbs glass, revealing its white underbelly and rounded pads at the end of its hands and feet.
Its toe pads are highly complex structures. Each has a large surface area, which helps it get a good grip.
A close-up.
Between the six-sided skin cells, there are small channels which fill with a sticky mucus. This acts as a continuously renewed glue, but one that allows the frog to peel off its foot and reattach it as it climbs. Some frogs have evolved a way of using their hands and feet in a quite remarkable way.
A towering waterfall in a forest.
In the remote rainforests of South America, there's a small amphibian known as a waterfall toad.
One climbs over smooth, shiny leaves with its almost translucent hands.
It, like so many frogs, is a favourite meal of snakes.
The speckled brown frog moves slowly. A striped snake flicks out its long, dark, forked tongue as it slithers over moss and across a tree branch.
Many frogs avoid their enemies by hopping, but this little toad can't hop more than an inch or so. Instead, when a swift retreat is needed, it has other techniques.
It leaps.
Free falling, which is easy, and stopping, which is more difficult.
It crashes onto a twig, then manages to hold on with one hand, swinging underneath. Reaching up with its other hand, it manages to climb up onto the branch. Misty, rocky outcrops.
Above the rainforests, there are mountains so drenched with rain that the rocks are bare except for a coat of slimy black algae. And here you can find the pebble toad. But there are predators here, too.
A large, hairy spider stalks over the rock as the glistening black frog climbs slowly upwards, leaving the valley far below.
This is a toad-eating tarantula, an expert in ambushing its prey. The pebble toad can't hop very far either, but it has a different defence.
As a tarantula leg appears from behind a rock, the toad suddenly falls backwards. It holds in its arms and legs.
It clenches its muscles so tightly that it becomes as bouncy as a rubber ball.
Now in the shape of a pebble, the frog tumbles over and over as it falls in slow motion down the rock face. It lands in a pool below. The frog floats motionless for a while in the clear water. It drifts in the current. Then it swims away with an awkward, waggling motion.
Danger averted and no damage done.
A bird of prey.
But hunters are everywhere, not only on the ground, but in the sky.
The sun shines on fallen logs as the bird flies in the blue sky.
Camouflage is an excellent defence. Blink and you could easily miss this Darwin's frog.
Camouflaged as a piece of leaf litter, the frog sits on some bark. The bird of prey flies overhead. David's holding a small green frog.
Most frogs are beautifully camouflaged, so that it's very difficult sometimes to spot them. But this one, which is the tiger-striped monkey frog from South America, has tiger stripes, orange and black, on the inside of its legs. So when it's sitting like that, it looks green. But if they're threatened by a predator, they can suddenly open their legs and reveal that orange and black underbelly, which people think puts off a predator. The great majority of frogs rely on camouflage. But a few take the other option, conspicuousness. Bright colouring can be a warning that an animal is unpleasant to eat, but some are more than merely unpalatable. This is the golden poison dart frog from Colombia, and its skin contains enough poison to kill 10 human beings, which is why I'm taking no chances and wearing gloves. Traditionally, the people in Colombia use that poison to tip their blowpipe darts, but of course for the frog, the poison serves as a defence against predators. And many poison dart frogs are very brightly coloured, just to warn predators of what would await them if they did take a mouthful.
It's bright yellowy green.
The toxicity of frog skin has traditionally been exploited by local people, but modern medicine has also found ways of using it.
A small striped frog leaps in slow motion.
One chemical compound from the skin of the tricolored poison dart frog is being used in the development of a groundbreaking painkiller, several hundred times more powerful than morphine.
water droplets.
A frog doesn't drink. It absorbs all the water it needs through its skin. It also gets most of its oxygen in the same way. But a permeable skin that allows water to flow in also allows it to flow out, and for some, that can be a problem.
If there's a dry spell, this giant monkey frog from South America produces a kind of ointment from glands in its skin, which it uses as sun cream.
The bright green frog stares.
At the beginning of the dry season, it takes steps to make sure that it doesn't get sunburnt or dry out. And with their supple joints, frogs can manage to reach all those odd places that the rest of us find a little tricky.
It uses its hind and forelegs to wipe itself as the sun glares from a deep blue sky.
The dry season can last for weeks, so it's best to be really thorough.
Another frog wipes its back, face and underbelly as it holds onto the twig it's perched on. Three giant monkey frogs sit in the sunshine next to each other on a branch.
Some frogs, however, never leave water at all.
A lake.
This is the highest lake in the world, Lake Titicaca, in the Peruvian Andes.
A knobbly brown frog underwater.
And the frog that lives here has very different problems. At 4,000 metres above sea level, there is very little oxygen in the atmosphere and therefore in the water. So the frog has developed bizarre-looking flaps and folds that increase the skin's surface area and therefore its ability to absorb oxygen.
It has staring, front-facing eyes.
The frog also increases the flow of water across its skin by doing what looks like press-ups.
Sitting amongst the weed at the bottom of the lake, it raises itself on its legs, then bobs back down again. Then it slowly waddles, pushing itself along the grass-like weed.
Because their skin is so sensitive to their surroundings, frogs are important biological indicators. If there are environmental problems, they're among the first creatures to be affected. But that permeability has also led, in recent years, to alarming declines.
This, crouched on a leaf, is one of the rarest frogs in the world. It's called the lemur leaf frog, and it lives in Costa Rica. Once it was widespread there, but today it's been reduced to a very small area.
A tiny green speckled frog with pale yellow hands.
It's nocturnal and lives in the humid rainforests of the lowlands. Unusually for a leaf frog, it has no webbing between its toes, and its stick-like legs give it a very distinctive walk.
A lemur leaf frog moves nimbly along parallel branches. Holding one on the back of his hand, David's fascinated by it.
What a lovely little creature. Here in the Manchester Museum, they're studying the species and doing their best to conserve it, both by breeding it in captivity and partly by going out to Costa Rica and studying it in the wild. The cause for its loss in numbers is threefold: loss of habitat, pesticides, and a particular lethal kind of fungus called a chytrid.
Sped up film of the fungus spreading.
The fungus causes the cells in a frog's skin to suddenly multiply, so that the outer layers thicken. That blocks the flow of essential salts through the skin. The muscles then can't function properly, and eventually the heart simply stops beating.
Several frogs lying dead as the fungus spreads. A frog with webbed feet diving underwater.
Scientists think that chytrid fungus started to spread back in the 1940s when African clawed frogs, which were probably carrying the fungus, were shipped all over the world for medical research, including pregnancy testing. Today, chytrid fungus is spreading uncontrollably, causing the extinction of some frog species and the severe decline of many others. It's the worst infectious disease ever recorded in terms of the number of species affected. Almost a third of all amphibians are now threatened with extinction, including the lemur leaf frog.
The future of this little frog is still hanging in the balance, but hopefully the work that's been done in here in Manchester will prevent it from becoming extinct. But other frogs have not been so lucky.
Over the years, I've filmed a number of different species, some of which are now extinct in the wild.
A yellow frog with black blotches.
The waving golden frogs we filmed in Panama belonged to one of the last remaining populations. The chytrid fungus was already spreading up from South America. So when we had finished, scientists collected all they could find and took them to specially sterilised breeding centres to keep them in safety until such time, if ever, the fungus disappears and they can be reintroduced to their original home.
The frogs are recorded, bagged, then carried away, once being studied in a large glass tank in a lab. David's marvelling at the golden black creature in his hand.
But despite the decline, the fact that frogs are such adaptable creatures does offer some hope. Some species, after all, manage to survive in places that might seem to spell certain death for creatures with moist skins. This is part of the Australian desert, where several years can pass without rain.
On the sand, a thorny-skinned lizard looks formidable.
It's a great relief when, at last, the drought breaks. And then, amazingly, little toads emerge from the sand.
As puddles of water form, an eye blinks open in the sand.
Numbers of them appear almost simultaneously. They have specially large legs to help them dig, which gives them their name, spadefoots.
A spadefoot emerges on the desert surface, then several others come out from burrows. The round-bodied creatures wipe the sand from their faces. In the dark, the toads are lively, hopping over the soft ground.
Now they must mate, if possible, before the sun rises.
One stretch of sand is covered in toad footprints. A spadefoot darts out its tongue to feed on crawling insects.
The desert dries very quickly, even after the heaviest of storms. Temperatures rise to 50 degrees centigrade. Now, any water on the surface will evaporate instantly. But the toads are already retreating and will soon be back underground. It really is a miracle that they're here at all.
Speeded up film of toads digging down, covering themselves in moist sand.
The spadefoot toad is not the only frog species to adapt to extreme environmental conditions.
Of all the frogs in the world, this perhaps is the most extraordinary. It's called the wood frog, and it lives in America north of the Arctic Circle. And it survives some of the coldest temperatures on Earth. It does so by becoming frozen solid.
The wood frog has a dark V marking on its nose. Snow falling in a bleakly beautiful landscape. A frog sitting on debris on the forest floor.
As the winter frost starts to bite, ice begins to form on the frog's skin.
Speeded up film of crystals forming. Ice covering the creature's body.
The liver goes into overdrive, producing glucose, which is pumped around the body by the heart.
Inside the frog,
this glucose acts like an antifreeze within the cells, preventing them from freezing. Instead, ice forms around them. The blood, however, is frozen, and all the organs are encased in ice. And the heart stops.
The perfectly still, deep frozen frog. Trickling water, a flower in bloom, a bee walking over ice.
But then, months later, spring at last returns.
Leafless silver birch trees.
And the ice around the wood frog begins to melt.
The frog's olive and brown skin emerges as the white coat recedes. As the ice melts from its face, the frog smacks its mouth open, then puts its head back, revealing a white throat. More speeded up film of the wood frog defrosting. Coming out of its frozen state, the frog twitches, then leaps into the water. On leaf debris in the pool, the sun shines on the wood frog's brown and green skin.
The wood frog's ability to survive is truly extraordinary. And that does give us the hope that maybe, in spite of the threats that face them today, frogs as a whole will continue to live on this planet. It would be truly sad if we lost them.
The iconic green tree frog sitting on David's hand. David keeps a safe distance from an African bullfrog. He's holding a smaller species. A splendid leaf frog with its specially adapted legs perched on David's fingers. A succession of frogs and toads with impressive calls and bulging vocal sacs. Thank you.